We need all hands on deck for faster, bolder climate action. A window of opportunity remains open, but only a narrow shaft of light remains. The global climate fight will be won or lost in this crucial decade on our watch. And one thing is certain, those that give up are sure to lose. So let's fight together and let's win. Thank you.
That's the United Nations Secretary General, Antonio Guterres, speaking at the opening ceremony of last year's COP27 Global Climate Summit. And yes, you've arrived. This is the latest episode of Climate Conversations. I'm your host, Robert McLean. Climate Conversations is assembled here in Shepparton, in northern Victoria, Australia, on the lands of the Yorta Yorta people. Yes, the stolen lands of the Yorta Yorta people. I pay my respects to their elders, past, present, and emerging.
Today, the members of the Science and Security Board moved the hands of the doomsday clock forward, largely, though not exclusively, because of the mounting dangers in the war in Ukraine. We moved the clock forward the closest it has ever been to midnight. It is now 90 seconds to midnight.
One of the few reasons that pushed the clock closer to midnight was climate change. You'll find a link to that story in the show notes. Now we shift to Richard Heinberg talking about his podcast, Power.
In this podcast, we've talked a lot of theory, a lot of history, a lot of ideas. In this bonus episode, I'd like to get more into kind of practical applications. In both the book and this podcast, I say that my purpose in writing is to explore the historical process that got us to our current existential global crisis, and then to help us all develop wisdom and perspective in this historic moment. My goal wasn't to come up with new solutions to humanity's converging crises, because until we have enough wisdom, we won't recognize real solutions, even if they already exist. First wisdom, then action. So wisdom by itself does have practical implications. But first we have to value it for its own sake. If we insist on skipping straight to solutions, we'll most likely choose actions that aren't really solutions at all, like nuclear fusion or carbon capturing machines. Other authors have addressed the question of how we humans got to where we are. A good example is Yuval Noah Harari, whose book Sapiens is immensely popular. My book tells the human story specifically from the perspective of power, and focusing on power is the essential key that unlocks the motives and processes that drove biological and social evolution. It also helps us understand the world we're living in now. So knowing how the world works, how we got here, and where we may be going offers some clear advantages, along with, frankly, some disadvantages. You may already be aware of some of those disadvantages. Knowing too much can neutralize you if you allow your awareness of our species' distressing short-term prospects to feed depression or cynicism. If you stop at despair, you haven't achieved wisdom, and you're doing little to guide or assist others.
That's Richard Heinberg speaking on the bonus episode of his podcast, Power. You'll find a link for that in the show notes. Now it's a story from today's Melbourne Age by Nick Toscano and Mike Foley. The headline for the story is, Fossil fuels fall to a record low in power grid as renewables hit new high. Fossil fuels sank to their lowest ever levels across Australia's east coast electricity mix in the final 3 months of 2022, as green power supplies overtook black coal's output for the first time in the history of the grid. The Australian energy market operator, AEMO, in a new report on Wednesday, revealed renewable energy generation hit a record high, supplying on average 40% of the grid's power during the December quarter, beating the previous record by 35%, set in the same period of the prior year. Now we have a story from Canary Media. The headline is, "A small modular nuclear reactor just got US approval, a big milestone." I might add, this story flies in the face of information provided yesterday on this podcast, arguing that such things as nuclear are no longer necessary. We can use solar, wind, and hydro, among other things, to power the world. However, we will go with the story, and you as the listener can make up your own mind. NuScale Power, a pioneer in small nuclear reactors, cleared the ultimate US regulatory hurdle in civilian advanced nuclear last week, and in doing so provided some hope for the long-heralded nuclear renaissance. In a historic ruling, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission certified the design of NuScale's 50-megawatt power module, the first small modular reactor, and just the seventh reactor design ever approved for use in the US. And now we have a story from Climate Action. The headline for the story is, "New energy trial enables people to power their homes from their electric vehicles." Kaluza and AVO Energy announced world-first vehicle-to-everything, that's V2X trial, in Flexion, will enable millions more drivers to benefit from powering their entire homes with their electric vehicles, EV, in the future. The scheme is being led by energy software pioneer Kaluza in collaboration with AVO Energy, Volkswagen Group UK, and EV smart charging tech business India, Indra. V2X technology not only allows their EV drivers to power their home with their car, but also leverage the EV as a backup power source, as well as being able to sell any surplus energy back to the grid, which can help significantly reduce energy bills. Let's jump now to a story from Rate It Green, Understanding Healthy Soil and Climate Change. The journalist is Veer Mundambi. The story begins, "Curbing greenhouse gas emissions traditionally centers around the reduction of fossil fuel dependence in our society. While arguably the most effective initiative, we cannot ignore other activities that act as sources of greenhouse gas emissions. We can start by looking at dirt. Healthy soil stores up to 3 times as much carbon as the atmosphere, and about 4 times as much carbon stored in all living animals and plants. That's approximately 2,500 gigatons of carbon safely sequestered and not clogging up our atmosphere. Depending on its composition, carbon can remain in the soil anywhere from a few days to a few centuries. Solar energy could be the key to Puerto Rico's transition to 100% renewables, study says. Jeff Brady writes, "It's becoming clearer how Puerto Rico might meet its goal of getting 100% of its electricity from renewable energy sources by 2050. Halfway through a 2-year federal government study called PR100, researchers concluded that the island has significantly more renewable energy potential than it needs. The report was released on Monday. Researchers found there's a preference among many residents for distributed energy, which is generated near where it is used. Rooftop solar panels are the most common example of that." And from Reuters we hear, or we can read at least, Norway plans to offer a record number of Arctic oil gas exploration blocks. The story that carries the dateline Oslo, January 24. Norway on Tuesday said it plans to offer energy firms a record number of oil and gas exploration blocks in the Arctic as it seeks to prolong its hydrocarbon production, while green campaigners criticize the risk to the environment. The Nordic country, Europe's largest gas supplier and a major crude exporter, proposes to offer 78 blocks to energy firms in the Barents Sea, the highest number since the so-called APA licensing round began in 2003. And now from Inside Climate News we hear, UN reports his humanity has altered 70% of Earth's land, putting the planet on a crisis footing. The story begins, "Damage to the Earth's lands, largely caused by the expansion of agriculture, has put the planet on crisis footing. says the authors of a sweeping new report that urgently calls for restoration of billions of acres of terrain to forestall the worst impacts of climate change. The report, published Wednesday, is the second major report from the United Nations Convention to Combat Desertification, UNCCD, a lesser-known UN group that's pressing the world's countries, governments and industries to preserve and rehabilitate degraded lands and ecosystems. And now we find a story from Liz Caspin, who writes for the Newcastle Herald. Her story is headlined, Liverpool Plains Farmers Oppose Seismic Testing and Hunter Gas Pipeline. The story begins. Dozens of farmers have gathered on the Liverpool Plains in northwestern New South Wales to oppose gas giant Santos exploring for coal seam gas on agricultural land. The gas producer sent thumper trucks into the area this week to conduct seismic testing after expired exploration licenses were renewed by the New South Wales government in April last year. This is something of a first for Climate Conversations. We go to the Albany Advertiser to read a story by Joss Zimmerman. The headline for the story is, McGowan government commits to legislating net zero by 2050 and introducing a five-year interim targets. The story begins. WA's target of reaching net zero emissions by 2050 will be formally enshrined in law, along with a commitment to slash public sector emissions by 80% by the end of the decade. The legislation will be introduced to Parliament this year, with Climate Action Minister Rhys Whitby labelling the race to slash greenhouse gas emissions to prevent catastrophic global warming the greatest challenge of our lifetime. The bill will also introduce a statutory requirement for the setting of five-yearly interim emissions targets, which would apply to the entire economy rather than just the government. Links for all those stories I've mentioned today will be in the show notes. Thanks so much for your company, because this wraps up this episode of Climate Conversations. So until we talk again, please take care, stay safe, and please be kind. And should you have enjoyed this episode, please feel free to share it with your friends. And I urge you to share it with your friends, as we all need to know all we possibly can about the climate crisis. Please take care.